Jen Baker, and welcome back to the Kitchen Confidant podcast. Today, we welcome Phoebe Lapine, the food and health writer, chef, speaker, and voice behind the award-winning blog Feed Me Phoebe. Phoebe is the author of 4 books, including her acclaimed memoir, The Wellness Project, and her work can also be found in Food and Wine, Marie Claire, Mind Body Green, and more. She's here with her newest book, Carbivore, 130 Healthy Recipes to Stop Fearing Carbs and Embrace the Comfort Foods You Love. Hi, Phoebe.
Hi, it's so nice to be on today.
Oh, I'm so glad to chat with you. I always start by asking, what's the first thing that you ever cooked and about how old were you?
Oh my gosh, it's so hard to think back that far. I made a lot of oatmeal chocolate chip cookies with my mom. Those are probably like the most distinct memories. But, you know, I feel like a lot of people, I have some pictures of me in the kitchen. So there's one of me crumpling up matzah for matzah braai with my aunt. And yeah, but I think it's has to be the oatmeal chocolate chip cookies from The Joy of Cooking.
Oh, the classic.
I know.
What a great book. It's so funny. I have one of the older versions of that, and there's some funny recipes in there.
Oh my gosh. I haven't looked through it in a while.
Oh, I'll look through it. You're going to see some interesting ones. You're like, wow.
Oh boy.
All righty. Could you tell everyone just a little bit about yourself and how your health and your journey in the world of food have become very intertwined?
Absolutely. So I started blogging in kind of the dark ages of blogging back when it was like a .blogspot URL. My first site was right out of college, and it was all about kind of cooking meals on a limited budget with limited space, limited time, kind of all those contingencies of being a young professional just new to New York City. And that got a cookbook deal pretty early on, which was really lucky. And right on the precipice of that book coming out, I started to have this complete health meltdown. And I ended up learning that I was very, very, very sensitive to gluten. I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And it was just kind of this turning point for me, which was unfortunate timing-wise. And so I was literally putting out a book and making all these recipes for the book party and whatnot that I could no longer eat. Still really proud of the book, but things are a little different now. So yeah, that basically catalyzed a whole new relationship with food, a whole new kind of chapter of my career of no longer being an omnivore and still trying to make a living, private chefing and catering in New York City. And that's what led me to my book that you mentioned, The Wellness Project. It was really kind of in my life as a guinea pig type experiment that I did to really figure out what health practices were worth my time, money, and energy. Because once I kind of dipped my toes into the wellness world, I just started to get super overwhelmed by the laundry list of things that practitioners said were bad for you or that you needed to do in order to be well. And I just thought, it can't really come down to switching every single one of my cleaning products and my mattress and like all these things. There has to be a middle ground. And that was kind of the toolkit that I found for myself by the end of that book. And now I'm really focusing on where carbs fit in to our broader wellness, because I think a lot of people get confused with them, myself included.
Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying reading your book so much because I do think that, well, the science is always changing. First of all, over the years, we've seen fat vilified and sugar and carbs. So I'm so happy that you're here to basically tell us that carbs are no longer the enemy.
I know, they really have been like the supervillain. Fat was, you know, the star of the 90s and created a lot of problems with kind of the balance of carbs on our plate. But now that we've wisened up a little bit to that, I think we've gone too far in the other direction because, after all, you know, our great grandparents were eating carbs for the majority of their meals. The global population still subsists, you know, at least 50% carbs. And At least as far as 100 years ago, a lot of the chronic modern illnesses that we're dealing with today, including autoimmune disease, were fairly rare. So it can't be just the carbs' fault, at least not entirely. And that's kind of where my research began, and in some finding some of those science-backed strategies is kind of how I built the cookbook around, you know, not necessarily what's on your plate, although, you know, balancing your macronutrients is part of it, but also talking to people about how we live our lives, how we move after meals, like the good night's sleep that we get, our stress management, actually all of these things really factor into our blood sugar control and our carb tolerance at meals.
It's so complicated. Who would have even thought that our sleep, but let's back up. Maybe we should do a little carb 101. Maybe you can just talk a little bit more about what is a carb and what are the biology basics?
Yes, let's get to the basics. I start right off with that in the book because I think definitions are really important. So carbs is basically a food slang term for carbohydrates, but I think in everyday conversation, it kind of refers to starchy ingredients. So rice, oats, potatoes, noodles, bread, and the various things that they produce, pancakes, whatnot. But in reality, the macronutrient carbohydrates is the building block of basically all of life on Earth. So if you were to truly go low carbohydrate, you would probably die. I mean, maybe not, but it would certainly not be good for your long-term health. So carbohydrates, they're a few different subcategories. Sugar is, of course, one of them. And I do think that sugar has kind of earned its reputation as the second supervillain of the century. And we can talk a little bit about that. But all sugar, kind of on a molecular level, is the same thing once it reaches your gut. So even if it's maple syrup or honey, a quote unquote natural sugar, I'm so sorry to report that once it reaches your small intestine, it just becomes glucose or stays fructose and only part of it is metabolized. And then starches are kind of complex chains of glucose. And then fiber is also a carbohydrate, which people don't realize. And fiber is hugely important for our overall health, especially our gut health, and hugely important for managing our glucose metabolism.
So it all works in harmony together.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, speaking of harmony, like how do we find harmony then in the food that we eat? Like how can we make carbs work for our bodies?
Yeah, so some of it comes down to something called food sequencing, which is essentially just the order that you eat your foods. So I just mentioned how important fiber is for your gut health. So fiber is essentially a string of glucose, but the fun thing about it is that it doesn't get broken down. Once it's formed, it is solid and just passes through your digestive canal until it reaches your large intestines where it feeds your microbiome, your many, many, many beneficial gut critters that kind of run your immune system, again, also have a huge impact on your blood sugar tolerance and whatnot. So fiber, very important kind of for overall health. But then in particular, when we have fiber before we have our carbs, our, again, slang term carb, it kind of forms this like fibrous mesh in our intestinal wall. I like to give people a visual with it. So if you were, let's say, making jam, or I have this recipe actually in the book for, yes, there are dessert recipes in the book for a tart with a raspberry lime curd. If you were to kind of muddle those raspberries through a fine mesh sieve, which in this analogy, the fine mesh sieve is your intestinal wall, all of that skin and seeds and whatnot, that kind of fibery sludge is going to get, you know, completely coated on the inside of the mesh sieve. And so when you try and pour something like apple juice or milk or what have you, it's not going to be just a straight waterfall through that sieve. It's going to be more of like a drip drip. And that's kind of the role that fiber plays in our blood sugar metabolism. Because the key really to maintaining, you know, good health and not overtaxing our organs and potentially skewing into diabetic territory or whatnot is just making sure that we don't have too much of a good thing all at once. So too much glucose flooding our bloodstream all at once.
That makes complete sense. So yeah, taking that example, like if you're having a glass of apple juice, it just pours right through. But if you eat the whole apple, it'll be more of a slow drip. Exactly. And then you'll have less of a crash afterwards.
Yeah. And even more so if you ate more fiber before, that doesn't necessarily have fructose in it. So if you ate a green salad or, I don't know, a few slices of avocado or whatnot, it's just about kind of the order of your foods. And then fat and protein also kind of help slow down the digestive process. They don't form that lovely sludge in your intestines, but they also do act to slow down the general process. So I think where we've really gotten into trouble a lot in modern life is just so much packaged foods has the fiber removed. So many packaged foods have added sugar on top of it. So many packaged foods are just simple starches. So, you know, white rice flour or whatnot, but just highly processed in general. The more processed a food is, the quicker it's going to be able to be broken down because your body doesn't have to do anything or doesn't have to do much in order to, you know, break down that whole food. So it actually really comes into play a lot when we think about, let's say, like breads and pastas made from alternative ingredients like the lentil pasta and the chickpea pasta. That fiber is actually not going to be quite as protective because the industrial processor has already done a lot of that breaking down of the food for you. So when I talk about whole foods in the book, when I talk about whole foods in life, I mean, you know, the whole almond, the whole chickpea, not necessarily the almond milk or the almond flour or the chickpea pasta.
Okay.
Not that there's anything wrong with those things, but you know, we really do want to have as many whole foods as possible, again, just to kind of slow down the digestive process. And that's why I kind of say the philosophy behind the recipes in Carbivore are slow carb, not low carb, because people get so fixated on just restriction. And the truth of the matter is it's not necessary. We can just change, you know, how we eat, how we prepare our foods rather than the actual what of, you know, the ingredients on our plate.
Yeah. So you talk about slow carbs in your book, and it made me really think about the breakfast that I choose. So normally I do like an avocado toast, which I think passes muster for you.
Yes. It checks boxes.
It checks the boxes. But when I want something sweet, what I typically, I'm going to ask you, okay, I'm going to give you my breakfast and you let me know if I'm doing this right.
Sure.
Or how I can improve it. Normally what I do is I get like the thick cut oats, it's rolled oats, but it's the thicker cut.
The old fashioned. Yeah.
Yeah. But even thicker than that, because Bob's Red Mill, I think, is it Bob's, has like their version of that thick. and the extra thick. Thank you. So I take that and I just cook it very quickly. And then I mash a banana in it and I put a tablespoon or two of peanut butter in there.
Great.
That's it at its base. And sometimes I might put like cinnamon. I might add protein powder, but is that okay?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that these strategies are there for you to really design a meal balance that strikes like the most pleasure possible. Because I think there are a lot of things that we do that we don't realize are problematic or just not setting ourselves up for success that don't bring us a whole lot of conscious pleasure. And that's why I like very much stress that dessert is great. Dessert comes at the end of the meal, food sequencing wise, like a treat that we have been kind of programmed to demonize as like, you know, so indulgent is actually the way we are designed to eat sugar. It's really the like quote unquote healthy snacks that are marketed to us that we eat on an empty stomach throughout the day that are the most problematic. So what I like about your breakfast is the peanut butter stirred in there, again, some more healthy fat and protein. The thicker the oat, the harder it will be for your body to break down. So that's great. It's like the quick cooking kind, the microwave kind that we have to be a little bit careful of. Steel cut oats, you know, an even bigger blood sugar bonus. But I know it with, you know, the thicker the oats or the thicker cut the oats, the longer it takes to cook. So I know we trade off a little bit with convenience. And then, yeah, I would say you could add some whole fruit on top, maybe some berries. Berries tend to be kind of a good fiber to fructose ratio. Tropical fruits tend to be a little bit more high in sugar compared to fiber. But yeah, and then if you love avocado toast, I mean, that's a perfect savory breakfast. I think, you know, as much as we can keep our sugar under control in the morning is really is what sets us up for success for the rest of the day. It helps us get to lunch without cravings, and then it helps us kind of manage our carb tolerance at lunch and dinner.
Yeah. So in your book, you have a DIY carbivore blood sugar experiment. Maybe you could just walk us through that, because I think that's something worth trying and experimenting with.
Yeah. So you can kind of see how food sequencing impacts you. I did some of these experiments through the app and program called Zoe, and they're really cool. They give you a continuous glucose monitor so you can really see the impact. But I also think, you know, it's really powerful to just go off how you feel. So what you can do is you can kind of start off with a simple starch. Maybe it's white rice. I did it with white rice and avocado, but you could also do it with pasta and maybe some roasted vegetables or whatnot. But the idea is to have a simple starch and just eat that on an empty stomach in the morning. See how you feel. See how long you get until lunch. Then the next day, you can try to have your vegetable with built-in fiber, let's say avocado, before your white rice, and eat your white rice, you know, 15 minutes after. So that's like the right way to food sequence, and see what that does to how you feel and your cravings throughout the day. Then you can try it in combination. So the white rice plus the avocado. And this is what I call in the book carb companions. So anything that we can add to the plate as well, like, I mean, ideally we can eat the fiber first, but it's also a huge boon to combine our carbs with the fiber, the fat, and the protein, like you're doing with your breakfast. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, per your breakfast, I would say maybe there's some more carb companions you could add. You could add some hemp seeds, some chia seeds, mm-hmm. some nuts, you know, it's a really fun way to kind of refocus the conversation on adding instead of taking away, and adding more deliciousness to make our meals, you know, even better for us. In terms of the experiments, some other blood sugar tips that I have are to move your body after a meal, because when we move our muscles, it basically requires our body even more energy to function. So that means if there's any glucose in your bloodstream, your muscles are going to kind of gobble that right up. So it doesn't have to be strenuous. We could take like a lap around the block, or, you know, take the stairs to your apartment, or to a meeting, or do a few sun salutations or stretches at your desk, really just anything to move our bodies, which is, again, this is something in our great grandparents' generation that was just built into the day. And now we're just so sedentary and sit so much. So again, one morning you can have your plain white rice and then go for a 10-minute walk after and see how you feel then. I personally, you know, find that the days that I end up relying on packaged foods, like, you know, a quote unquote energy bar, are the ones when I'm running out the door. But I actually don't feel as big of an impact usually, because especially in New York, I'm like running out the door and going to end up walking for 10 minutes, 15 minutes to the subway, walking up and down stairs, or even going to, you know, a workout class. So all those times are when, you know, I just don't feel as worried about reaching for the packaged snack that has a lot of added sugar, because I know that it's going to be like a time where I'm a little bit more protected.
That makes a lot of sense. So I guess in picking slower carbs, what are your carb all-stars?
Okay. So the book is really a love letter to carbs. It's divided into chapters based on oats, rice, potatoes, grains from around the world, which includes quinoa, millet, and buckwheat, mm-hmm. The unsung hero, buckwheat. And then I have a bread chapter, a corn chapter, a legume chapter, probably missed one in there. But yeah, these are kind of the carb all-stars that, I mean, my life from a pleasure standpoint revolves around. And yeah, it's just about kind of designing dishes that make them a little bit better for us, that include a lot of plants. I've got just tons of veggies packed every which way. I have a chapter up front on carb companions, which is like dips and sauces, and also some starter salads. And those are the only recipes in the book that don't involve a carb all-star, but I have some nut and seed sprinkles in there, which are super fun. And it's kind of my favorite carb companion. I make all of them and just have them in my pantry and just, you know, sprinkle them on a pasta or salad or what have you, or a grain dish. And those are really fun. But yeah, I think people forget that even pasta, even white rice, all of these things have nutrients. You know, we've been told that, you know, white rice is not good for you, but brown rice is okay. And at the end of the day, like, it doesn't have a make a huge difference on your blood sugar. And at the end of the day, people subsist completely on white rice and there are nutrients in it. And the same thing goes for pasta, for wheat flour. I mean, how many complete societies just like lived off of bread for majority of their life?
Yeah, it's a good reminder. I love that when you flip through your book, you don't feel like you're having to hold back in any way. You know what I mean? You don't feel restricted, which I think is probably what's most relieving about cooking in this way and thinking this way. And actually, I think it's just, if anything, you're just encouraging us to include more foods into a dish, which is great. And in terms of like vilifying things like white rice, it's so funny because my son is an athlete. He's a competitive athlete. And so I'm learning more and more like, he needs the carbs just as much as everyone's, you know, oh, it's all about the protein. It's the carbs are just as important, especially for endurance.
For sure.
So it's interesting to see what works for him as well, you know?
Yeah. Well, it goes back again to moving your muscles. It's why elite athletes need like sugar gels because their muscles are using a lot of energy and they need it to go immediately into their bloodstream so it can be gobbled up again. And yeah, that just goes to show, just as you said, everyone is going to have to choose their own carb adventure. Everyone's going to have to choose their own carb adventure every day. You know, days that are more sedentary, you know, if you ate a bowl of white rice, then yeah, you may have cravings by the time you get to lunch and, you know, be absolutely ravenous. But if you have it and then go for a run, you know, it could be quite different.
Yeah. Okay. So what are your go-to recipes in this book that we should try?
Well, it's top of mind right now because I just made it, but there is a BLT chicken panzanella in there. Ooh. That's so good. And I say that, and I use gluten-free bread in it. And gluten-free bread is like, you know, not always the best. And even it's even delicious with gluten-free bread. I say the whole book is gluten optional, by the way, because you can use any bread you like in the bread chapter. You can use any pasta you like in the pasta chapter. You can even, you know, be paleo and just use a paleo pasta in the pasta chapter. So that one's from the bread chapter. It's really easy. You make it entirely on a sheet pan. And so it's all raw ingredients and then the chicken and the pancetta and the bread all toast together. And the bread gets like really delicious and like crispy, but also like soaks up some of the bacon grease. It's really good. And then this is a little bit more of a special occasion dish, but it's one of my more creative triumphs, I think. And that is crab cake baked potatoes. So you essentially, it's like twice baked potatoes, you hollow it out a little bit. And then instead of, you know, padding the crab meat with breadcrumbs, you use some of the potato flesh and mix it into the crab mixture. And then you just like pile it on top of the halved potatoes. And it's just, again, it's a really kind of smart way of quote unquote lightening up a twice baked potato without you feel like you're taking anything away. I mean, you're adding like delicious crab meat, lots of healthy fats, beautiful herbs, and yeah, a little jalapeno on top. It's really delicious. And it's also, I mean, crab meat's a little bit more on the expensive side, but you can stretch it a long way with carbs, which is the beauty of carbs is that they're cheap, they're convenient, they're pantry stable. And I just don't know how people on low carb diets honestly do it. Like, it's just not accessible to everyone. Like, you end up spending so much more money.
Yes. Yeah. Economically speaking, it's tough to go low carb, but
So this is, so you know, a happy medium because you're not going to be replacing a huge quadrant on your plate with animal protein. You can, you know, I think my recipes are not necessarily like 50-50 carb and vegetables and protein, but I always kind of aim for the carbs to be taking up a little bit less space than usual, but to fill in that gap with more vegetables. Okay, I got to choose a third recipe. So we did a bread, we did a potato, and well, I have to choose a pasta because I love a lot of the pasta recipes in the book. I mean, there's a spinach artichoke dip mac and cheese. That's so good. And you just use, you know, frozen or canned artichoke hearts, frozen spinach. It's like really easy to throw together. And also, again, really good gluten-free version as well.
Oof. Now I can't wait to cook. I'm so excited. Well, Phoebe, I am so loving your book and I can't wait to cook from it. But before I let you go, I've just got some few closing questions. What's something that you make when you're too tired to cook and you need an emergency go-to dinner?
I mean, honestly, it's just spaghetti and tomato sauce with like an arugula salad. And now that I'm a carbivore, I'll just eat a bit of the arugula salad first, maybe add a diced avocado in there. But then, yeah, like anyone else, I take, you know, my spaghetti off the pantry and my jarred pasta sauce. And like, that's really, and then now when I have it ready made in the pantry, I add my pine nut, nut and seed crunch to the top, which is kind of Italian flavored. And yeah, just adds a little something, something, a little carb companion to the pasta itself.
Oh, I love that. So rather than just breadcrumbs, you could just.
It adds a lot of texture too, which I love.
Yeah, I like that. What's the one recipe that you treasure the most?
In this world, mm-hmm. in this whole wide world. well, my mom, this is such a weird choice, but it's this recipe that has was in my first cookbook. It's my mom's detox soup. And it's something that I like thought was completely vile growing up. I would see this like gross green like mixture in like an old mason jar in the fridge and be like, ugh. And then eventually when I was old enough, I tasted it and I was like, oh, like this is actually delicious. So it's like kind of the perfect mix of healthy and tasty. It's basically just like really good chicken stock, zucchini, Swiss chard, and a whole bunch of cilantro. Mm. And you just like cook the zucchini until it's soft and then puree the whole thing. And so it's just funny because again, as I mentioned, my first cookbook was not at all health oriented, but I loved the soup so much then that I still put it in. And then it's just something that's really kind of come up again and again. It was in my last book, which was all about gut health. And I get messages from people all the time on Instagram that I was like, I made your mom's detox soup the other day. So I just think it's been kind of a sweet through line through my culinary career and just something that I make, you know, whenever I'm feeling just the slightest bit run down.
Yeah, it sounds super comforting and nutritious. Yeah. So yeah, I totally understand.
And you drink it out of a mug. You just like sip it out of a mug.
Oh, nice. It's like the new bone broth.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you a messy cook or a neat cook?
I'm pretty neat, honestly. I clean as I go. I used to be really messy and then I got my act together.
Yeah, I'm kind of hopefully on that path.
Yeah. But what's catering, like having to do it in other people's kitchens that like made me snap out of it because, you know, there's always people around and you just don't want to, I don't know, be making a massive mess in someone else's space.
That is so true. What's a good kitchen tip that you can share?
Well, this is so basic, but always anchor your cutting board with a wet paper towel. Yeah. I know that there are cutting boards that are made with like the little like rubber kind of guards so that they don't slip. But even those, I think it's important to put a wet paper towel underneath so that there is no questioning that is going to be a stable surface to cut from. So that, I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily like people are hurting themselves all the time, but it actually wastes time for you to be constantly trying to fight the movement. Yes. And then I always think, you know, when it comes to cleanup, then you have a wet paper towel already there that you can just wipe the counter and your workspace with.
Yeah, it's such a good tip. I actually did that the other day because I was at an Airbnb and the board was sliding everywhere. Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh.
No, but it really, even a warped board, it can, yep. It can anchor usually.
Yeah, you don't want that happening. Okay, so every week I try to share five little things with my audience, something that made me smile. Is there anything that made you smile this week?
Well, now I'm being served a lot of like carb humor videos on social media. And I can't remember this girl's handle, but she's a dancer and she did like what different pasta shapes would dance like. And
oh, how funny.
I just can't even describe it. It was so silly. It was so good. Like spaghetti was like really fancy and hoity-toity. And then she did like, I don't know if she did fusilli or, oh no, she did ravioli, which was really funny. Anyway, I can send you the link for the show notes.
Totally send it to me. I love those kind of things. That's so fun. Well, Phoebe, it was so good to chat with you. Thank you for sharing your love of carbs with the world. Where can everyone find you and your book?
So you can find me at Phoebe Lapine on Instagram or TikTok. And you can find free recipes and lots more resources at feedmephoebe.com. And then you can find a link to order the book. And also there are a bunch of bonuses right now for the early birds at carbivorecookbook.com. And if you just search carbivore, just know that we're having some SEO issues. It will automatically change to carnivore in a lot of places. So just make sure that you change it back. You did mean carbivore.
Well, the more that people search, the more the SEO will learn.
So just keep on searching for carbivore. It'll show up, I promise.
I love that. Well, good luck with the launch. Thank you so much, Phoebe, and I cannot wait to cook from your book.
Thank you for having me and for giving it such a great read.
Something that really resonated with me is the idea that every day we can choose our carb adventure. It's just being cognizant of our decisions and making it work for us. I hope that today's chat with Phoebe explained and perhaps demystified carbs and that you found it as helpful as I did. Thank you again to Phoebe for sharing her carb love and knowledge, and to you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and remember, one way you can help is by sharing it with a friend. I can't wait to see you again next time. Until then, happy cooking.